system for banning pro-Palestinian university groups calling it violation of students' free speech. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us. Israel continues to strike the Gaza Strip as the regime's brutal war on the besieged Palestinian territory enters its 42nd day. The regime has launched a fresh attack on the Jabalia refugee camp, killing at least 15 people. Casualties have also been reported after an Israeli attack on the Nuseirat refugee camp. Hospitals also remain the focal point of Israeli strikes. Hundreds of wounded individuals have been scattered on the floors of Gaza's Indonesian hospital due to the non-stop influx of injured people. The hospital's director says the facility is completely out of service. Al-Shifa Hospital, that was raided by Israeli forces on Wednesday, also remains surrounded by Israeli tanks.
The situation at Al-Shifa Hospital is very dangerous and catastrophic. The Israeli army invaded the Al-Shifa complex last night, and since then, we have lost contact with our colleagues, patients, and everyone inside the Al-Shifa medical complex. We are unable to ascertain the events inside the Al-Shifa complex, including violations against the medics and patients by Israeli forces.
Israel launched this genocidal war on the Gaza Strip on October the 7th. The conflict has taken the lives of at least 11,500 Palestinians. Most of the victims are women and children. The senior representative of Hamas in Lebanon says the Palestinian resistance fighters are not operating in any hospitals.
There is no center or control room for Hamas in this hospital. We avoid all the hospitals all the time. The Israelis, they have said that about Al-Randisi Hospital, and they were lying. They've said that about Al-Quds Hospital, and everyone realized that they were lying. And now everyone is watching their lies, even with the support of the United States administration.
Osama Hamdan said the United States and Israel have aired baseless allegations against Hamas. He underscored the Israeli military's failure to provide substantial evidence to prove Hamas operations under the Shifa hospital complex. Hamdan also examined the footage Israel's military has put on the internet. The senior Hamas official accused the regime of propagating untrue stories about its bloody war on Gaza. Hamdan mentioned several cases of such Israeli propaganda. In one of the cases, an old Palestinian man was killed after Israeli media showing him being helped by the regime soldiers. Hamdan also said the military wing of Hamas has been successful in damaging or destroying Israeli vehicles.
The Qassam brigades have succeeded in destroying and inflicting damage on 33 vehicles over the last 48 hours.
Hamdan said Al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of Hamas, continues its operations. Al-Qassam Brigades issued a statement saying that in 24 hours, it destroyed a building where Israeli soldiers were hiding in. The soldiers were either killed or wounded, it said. Palestinian people are able to outlast the Israeli offensive on the Gaza Strip and will certainly emerge victorious. That's according to the head of the Political Bureau of the Palestinian Resistance Movement, Hamas. Ismail Hani added that Palestinian resistance fighters have delivered painful blows to the Israeli army since the regime began its onslaught on Gaza on October the 7th. He said the Palestinians have foiled Israel's plans. Hani noted that the regime will not be able to retrieve its captives except by paying the price. The Hamas leader described Israel's attacks on the Palestinian territory as barbaric. He called for the implementation of the resolutions issued in the recent Arab-Islamic summit held in Saudi Arabia. The summit called for the ending of Israeli aggression and breaking the siege on the Gaza Strip. The dire humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip is rapidly deteriorating amid Israel's brutal war and siege on the Palestinian territory. The World Food Programme warned civilians in Gaza face the immediate possibility of starvation because food and water have become practically non-existent. The WFP added that lack of fuel is also impeding the delivery of food. It said the amount of food entering Gaza remains woefully inadequate. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights also raised the alarm about widespread hunger in the Gaza Strip.
The total depletion of fuel supplies is imminent, according to UNRWA, and it would be catastrophic across all of Gaza, leading to the complete collapse of water, sewage, and crucial healthcare services, and ending the trickle of humanitarian assistance that has been permitted to date. Massive outbreaks of infectious disease and hunger seem inevitable.
Turk was speaking at a press briefing at the UN office in Geneva. Meanwhile, the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees warned of a deliberate attempt to paralyze its operations in Gaza. The suspension of UNRWA mission in Gaza would pose new challenges to hundreds of thousands of displaced Palestinians who are under the agency's support. In the United States, Florida has been sued by civil liberties societies after the state imposed a ban on pro-Palestinian university groups protesting Israeli atrocities in Gaza. The American Civil Liberties Union seeks to repeal the ban on Students for Justice in Palestine, a group which has staged pro-Palestinian rallies across U.S. universities. The lawsuit says the ban violates students' free speech. Last month, Florida blocked chapters of the SJP from receiving school funds and using campus facilities for what he called violation of university policies. American universities have seen countless pro-Palestine protests since Israel started its onslaught on Palestinians in Gaza on October the 7th. A number of U.S. universities, including Columbia and George Washington, have already imposed bans on pro-Palestinian activities. Pro-Palestine sentiment continues to expand across the globe, with people staging new demonstrations in condemnation of Israel's savagery in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Let Gaza live! Let Gaza live!
In Washington, police scuffled with protesters outside the Democratic National Headquarters. The protesters were calling for an end to Israel's genocidal war on Gaza. Police dispersed the demonstrators, and some were arrested. Elsewhere in San Francisco, hundreds of protesters blocked the entrance into the APEC summit. Some demonstrators tried to prevent summit attendees from entering the venue. The protesters demanded an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. In London, protesters assembled outside Parliament, demanding that lawmakers support a ceasefire in Gaza. Also in Jordan's capital, Amman, security forces mobilized to guard the U.S. embassy as hundreds of protesters gathered outside the premises. The protesters condemned Washington's support for Israel and the regime's raid into Shifa Hospital in Gaza. The commander of the Quds Force of Iran's IRGC has sent a message of support to the Gaza resistance, hailing Operation Al-Aqsa Flood as an epic of grand scales that laid bare the fragility of Israel. Brigadier General Ismail Ghani said the operation showed Israel's security is far more vulnerable than a spider's web. The letter was addressed to the commander of the Al-Qassam Brigade, Mohammed Daif. It said the Palestinian operation united Muslim nations around the notion of jihad against Israel. He said now everyone believes Palestine and the wider region will not be the same in the wake of the Al-Aqsa flood. The Iranian commander touched on attacks by the resistance against Israeli troops and armored vehicles, saying the strikes portray the creative side of the resistance. The Iranian general said Tehran will do its best to support the Palestinian resistance in the ongoing war. He said the resistance front will not allow Israel to corner Gazans and achieve its objectives. Shabir Rezvi says the Israeli regime is a passive player that only reacts to Hamas initiatives in the ongoing war in Gaza. Let's take a listen.
The Palestinian resistance has Israel right where it wants them. Israel is reacting. It is not taking its own measures. It is being forced to make decisions. Based off this, they have been forced into engaging the resistance, but every time they actually engage the resistance, they cover up their casualties. They cover up the loss of their vehicles. They instead are relying on this air campaign, this inhuman, this genocidal bombing campaign to actually force the resistance out of wherever they may be, but they are ultimately failing. Two, you also have the international community, but also just people worldwide, seeing the failure of Israel, and instead of actually engaging the resistance, the true face of Zionism is actually exposed, because instead of actually going, combat to combat maneuver, they insist on bombing civilians, they insist on war crimes. They insist on using white phosphorus. They insist on bombing hospitals and schools. And now what we're also seeing is them fabricating lies right before the international audience. We have seen time and time again the lies of the Israeli defense forces, quote unquote, being exposed. And so right now, essentially the resistance has boxed in the Zionist entity to a point where there's no way that they can achieve all of their objectives. There's simply no way, because one, they're losing on the ground, and they're also losing the support that they once had amongst even Western leaders.
Hezbollah has carried out another strike against Israel's military positions along the border. Hezbollah fired rockets and missiles towards 7 Israeli military sites. Injuries have been reported amongst Israeli soldiers. Hezbollah and Israeli troops have been engaged in direct clashes since the 7th of October, when the regime ignited its bloody war machine to bombard the besieged Gaza Strip. Hezbollah says it will continue striking Israel's positions until it stops the crimes against Palestinians. Earlier this week, an international delegation of writers, lawyers, journalists, and activists went to Egypt to push for the opening of the Rafah border crossing, which connects the Arab country to the besieged Gaza Strip. But members of the delegation were arrested by Egyptian authorities near the crossing and later deported. Dan Kovalik, a member of the group, joined us earlier to explain what happened to them.
At the last minute, at like 5:30 in the morning, when we were supposed to leave, they denied the international delegation's right to go to Rafah. So we never got to the Rafah crossing. We then held a press conference in front of the U.S. Embassy in Cairo to call for the opening of the Rafah border and, of course, an end to the U.S. support for the genocide in Gaza. And that's when we were arrested in front of the U.S. Embassy in Cairo. I think they got unnerved by a gathering of people in front of the embassy. By the way, it was across the street from the embassy. It's not like it was right in front of it. It was across a very big lane, very big avenue in Cairo, across. So it wasn't any threat to the physical integrity of the embassy. But when they came up to us, they made it clear they were upset and disturbed by the fact that some of us were wearing keffiyehs, that some people had Palestinian flags. They made it clear that's what they were concerned about. They asked if any of the members of the group were Palestinian, even if they were Palestinian Americans. So that was clearly part of what was going on there.
Now, Pakistan's former ambassador to the United Nations, Ali Sarwar Naqvi, says public outcry is the only way to push a ceasefire in Gaza, as the UN has proved to be ineffective in that regard. Let's take a listen.
The basic problem is that the United Nations can be effective and functional only if all its members desire to do so. Then, in the Security Council, there is the discriminatory process of those members who are permanent, and they can veto any resolution. So effectively, they make the Security Council totally, impractical and ineffective to work with. You know, in the Vietnam War, the reason the U.S. administration was forced to sue for peace and to hold peace talks in Paris in the 60s and early 70s of the last century was because of public protest, because of the fact that people came out on the streets. Students in the universities came out in protest and demonstration against the policies of the government. So there was such a massive change in public opinion that the government had to also alter its foreign policy. Now, here the situation is very worrisome and very bad, but unfortunately, the Israeli and the Jewish lobby in the United States is using all resources and keeping the media on its side. The media in America is still talking about Israel's right of defense and Israel's dealing of the threat that comes from Gaza. So the media war has to be fought also. And I think if public opinion turns against Israeli action, then the media will also have to follow suit and change its stance.
And with that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for being with us. Take care for now.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
in the limelight.
The Zionist regime is turning Gaza hospitals into morgues. Recent reports say conditions at Gaza hospitals have seriously deteriorated. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Crescent International Road, the Israeli occupation army has surrounded Al-Shifa and other hospitals in Gaza with tanks and snipers, as this report is being compiled. The largest medical complex in Gaza comprising three specialized facilities, surgical, internal medicine, and obstetrics, Al-Shifa is being turned into a morgue. It has patients and newborn babies in incubators, as well as thousands of Palestinian families displaced from their homes by relentless Israeli regime bombardment. The hospital is being targeted and is under threat of bombing and destruction. The Zionist regime has already bombed the entrance to the hospital, and recently several ambulances were attacked by Israeli regime missiles, killing 15 injured people that were being transported. The ambulances carrying injured patients were on their way to the Rafah crossing to take them to Egypt for treatment. Instead, the Zionist regime's planes bombed the road the Palestinian Red Crescent Society ambulances were traveling on, forcing them to return. As the ambulances arrived near the entrance of Al-Shifa Hospital, the Zionist regime planes bombed them, killing the injured Palestinian civilians. Now, Israeli occupation forces have surrounded Al-Shifa Hospital with tanks and snipers, are shooting anyone who comes in their sight. The Zionist regime's war criminals allege that Hamas has a command center under the hospital, an accusation the hospital's director has rejected as utter lies. The Zionist regime has peddled other lies, like the beheading of 40 Israeli babies or the killing of civilians by Hamas. All have been debunked by the Zionist regime sources themselves, but that has not prevented the pro-Israeli Western media and politicians from repeating them. Al-Shifa Hospital director Mohammad Abu Salmiya was quoted as saying that the medical complex was cut off from the outside world and under Israeli fire. Gaza's health ministry director Munir Al-Barsh said any moving object around Al-Shifa Hospital is a target for the Zionist regime forces. The number of dead is so high that it has led to plans to dig a massive grave within the hospital premises. Al-Barsh said, "We cannot move within or outside the perimeter of the hospital. We are surrounded. We cannot bury our dead. We are going to create a mass grave within the hospital compound." In addition to Al-Shifa Hospital, Al-Quds Hospital is also being targeted. The Zionist regime forces are within meters of the hospital and firing tank shells at the building. According to a CNN report, Annas Hospital and Al-Rentisi Pediatric Hospital in northern Gaza are also being attacked. Doctors and medical staff say that they will be killed any minute together with thousands of civilians that have sought shelter there. Targeting hospitals, schools, and residential buildings constitute war crimes. Israeli political and military rulers are guilty of heinous crimes and must be held accountable for perpetrating a genocide in Gaza. According to the World Health Organization, half of Gaza's 36 hospitals have shut down due to lack of electricity and medicines. Gaza's Deputy Health Minister, Dr. Yusuf Abu Al-Arish, currently inside Al-Shifa Hospital as it comes under heavy fire from Israeli forces, spoke to Al Jazeera. Here are his translated comments reported by the Qatari channel. "This is a moment we have been warning the world of. All generators are off. All power sources are cut. We have 39 newborns in incubators. Those babies are fighting against death. No one is able to move around the compound. The snipers are stationed all over the place in addition to the drones that target and kill any moving person. A few minutes ago, one of the engineering team was hit by a sniper. He was hit in the neck and was paralyzed, and he is now about to die. Part of the hospital was shelled and part of the building caught fire. We fear it will engulf the whole compound. A few families tried to leave, but they were targeted. Now they are lying dead outside the hospital. We cannot get to them. We are totally stranded. We are cut off from the outside world. And above all, we are left without any medical resources. We cannot even bury the dead. Ferocious gunfire can be heard within the vicinity of the hospital. The intensive care unit received a mortar shell a few minutes ago. Blood is everywhere, on the floor. We cannot even clean it. In the past, the Israeli killing machine was killing, and this was conveyed on TV screens. Now they are perpetrating the same killing, but no one is listening. No one is watching. The whole world is standing by. We are speaking with whatever is left of my phone battery. After that, we will be silent." Ashraf Al-Ghudra, spokesperson of Gaza's health ministry, says the displaced people, wounded, and medical staff inside Al-Shifa Hospital are suffering due to the lack of food and water. The situation is worsened by the power blackout, with fear also spreading due to the heavy gunfire by the Zionist regime forces, he added. Al-Ghudra said, "We are besieged inside Al-Shifa Medical Complex, inflicting collective punishment on innocent civilians also constitutes a war crime. Israeli rulers are guilty of genocide, collective punishment, and ethnic cleansing. Western rulers are complicit in the Zionist regime's war crimes." According to Al Jazeera English, conditions at both the Indonesian and Al-Shifa hospitals, as well as other hospitals in Gaza, have seriously deteriorated since Al Jazeera last spoke to Al-Haq recently. Dr. Mohammad Abu Salmiya, the director of Al-Shifa Hospital, warned recently that hundreds of injured people, as well as newborn babies, needed to be urgently transported to an operational medical facility, as his hospital was crumbling under the strain of a lack of fuel and medicine, as well as the Zionist regime's bombardments. Abu Salmiya told Al Jazeera English, "It's a tragedy. The dead bodies, we cannot put them in freezers as they are not functioning, so we decided to dig a pit in the vicinity of the hospital. It's a very inhumane scene. The situation is totally out of control. Hundreds of bodies are decomposing." Atef Al-Kahlot, the director of the Indonesian hospital, said his facility is operating only at between 30 to 40% of capacity, and he made an appeal for the world to help. He said, "We call on the honorable people of the world, if any of them are left, to put pressure on the occupation forces to supply the Indonesian hospital and the rest of the hospitals in the Gaza Strip."
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Muslim Lady from IRIB English Radio. And this is Umabiha Mukhtar, the host of the show. And our guest today is Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher and is going to enlighten us about the status of a woman according to the leader, according to Sayyid Ali Khamenei. So first, Sister Salma, Salamun Alaikum.
Wa Alaikum Salam wa Rahmatullah.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you also.
So inshallah, today we are going to be talking about what our beloved spiritual leader tells us about a woman's role in the family, because I feel as a woman myself and having a home, I want to know that my role in the family is supposed to be very, you know, weighty and is looked at greatly by Allah, so that I feel better, because a lot of women feel, you know, they're doing less. They're not able to give so much the way, for example, their husbands are able to.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yes, Ayatollah Khamenei stresses a lot on how, you know, family life. He stresses a lot on family life, the way I was going through. And he first says women should enjoy freedom to develop these, you know, talents in the home, okay, within the circle of home and family. These are the best areas for it to happen, her talents being exposed. So he says, in his opinion, one of the main issues is the family issue. And the basis of the issue is the woman's security. Okay? Allah wants that security of a woman in every way. For example, from you know, the stranger's eyes.
Yes.
And also her safety at home means with her husband. Not alone, of course.
Yeah.
That means encouraging marriage. And then he says nothing should prevent a woman from studying and reading, learning and writing, of course. And this is all related to women who are interested, for example, to develop these talents at home. Now, what does he mean by this? Does it mean that she should study at home? Mm-hmm. No, it means that she should be encouraged by the people, the members at home, right from home. If she's wanting to study and, for example, you know, like learn how to read and write and all these things, she should not be prevented to extra do that, you know. If she's in the field of, for example, becoming a physician, a doctor, or she wants to become a pharmacist, she shows interest in that, encourage her.
Yeah.
A father should encourage her daughter. A husband should encourage her, his wife.
I feel that support is very necessary.
Yeah,
very
for important. A woman, it's very necessary. It's like she's a flower. You shouldn't treat her like in that way aggressively, you know.
Yeah.
Ayatollah Khamenei encourages this kind of thing to happen, that, you know, don't discourage her, always don't prevent her even from studying, reading, learning and writing. And the grounds should be prepared for these tasks to happen, Ayatollah says. And of course these grounds for this thing to happen is through encouragement.
So when we look at women, you know, they usually have this complaint that they're not looked at or respected enough at home because their husbands come home and say, oh, what have you been doing all day? You know, you've just been at home cleaning, cooking. You know, that's not a big deal. We have been out in the real world doing the important work. So a lot of women get disheartened with this kind of portrayal by their husbands. So I think, do you mean to say this is supposed to be like a both ways, like the husband supporting is as necessary as, you know, the woman wanting? So if the husband doesn't support, it kind of makes it really hard for a woman to even do her basic, you know, necessary works or jobs.
Yeah.
Because if, as a woman, I feel my me cooking or me taking care of my children is not even respected or not even accepted by my husband nicely, it gets so difficult.
Yeah, that's true. And it all goes back to spouse selection. How you select your spouse, yeah? Is he compatible with you? So be very choosy on that. And also we'll see how Ayatollah Khamenei recommends the youth on marriage, but he stresses that you have to be very choosy with your spouse, whom you select.
Definitely.
Don't just choose somebody whom you feel that you have, you know, liked on the, his physical basis or his knowledge. No, you have to understand which family he hails from, what kind of parents does he have,
yes,
what kind of neighbors, what do they say about him. So this is like a big project. You don't
very
have to
true.
Just forego it just by a person's outer face that, you know, taqwa cannot be said that he is in a one-day judgment. Taqwa is something that is an embedded, unwired thing that requires ages for a person to understand that this person is pious.
Very true.
You know, and piety is something that, and good actions are the are two the criteria to look for in a spouse. So what can you expect a spouse who, you know, ignorant man, he is not expected to, you know, support his wife.
Very
so
true.
The wife even can't blame in a way that, you know, we are disrespected. In a way, she or her family had not given enough time or importance to this kind of marriage spouse selection. So this should be done very thought-provokingly from day one.
Exactly.
That is the best advice I could give for youngsters who are embarking on such a, you know, religious institution, such a noble institution that is among the sunnah of the Holy Prophet, you know?
Exactly. So I would love to hear more about what Rahbar has to say on, you know, encouraging marriage. And inshallah, we hope to get to that after the break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Okay, so Sister Salma, you were telling us about, you know, the issues that occur for a woman and her role in the family, and how it's important for her to take that also as important, the woman's security, and etc. So can you tell us more about why a woman is encouraged, or generally people are encouraged to get married at a younger age or at a, you know, youthful age instead of too late, and what Rahbar has to say about that? Because like you had mentioned previously, a lot of reasons why, you know, the family is not able to progress is because there is no compatibility between the husband and wife. So is it encouraged to marry young? Is it encouraged to, you know, marry in a particular way? Please tell us.
It is better to marry at the right time, in the right place, okay? So first of all, when Ayatollah Khamenei talks about youth and marriage, he starts off with mentioning that one of the cardinal and most major sins committed by the West today is the fact that marriage and family formation have been belittled so much and been discredited, taken for granted, you know,
yeah.
Taken it as a small and a side issue, whilst it's the main like thing to form a family and everything. And that's what Ayatollah Khamenei really stresses on the family. And before that, of course, he's now educating the youth about the marriage. He says, in view of all women and I've spoken to in this regard, on many occasions, he says, I've repeatedly said that in the Holy Quran, women have been mentioned as examples of piety, and also women have been mentioned as examples of those people who lack faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He starts off. And this is a very interesting point. When the Holy Quran mentions examples of good and bad people, the examples of women are taken. For example, he says about Hazrat Asiya, who was the wife of Fir'aun, if you go and see, how did she become so great that Allah uses her an example of the believing women through a family system? Allah applauded her that she was the one to sing these praises that, oh Allah, I want near you a house, right, in Jannah, right?
Yeah.
So when examples are used, example of the great lady Hazrat Maryam is also used, that she was among the ones who was chaste. Why? She was brought up in such a chaste manner. She was also nurtured in a chaste manner. And she had challenges that people were like after her chastity. So at that time, Allah used her as an example. So good women also under the family system. See?
Very true.
So through what? Marriage. That's why Ayatollah Khamenei stresses on marriage, and then he comes to the family.
Okay.
That these are the women who can rise, good people who can rise through family. And again, when he wants to take, Allah wants to take examples of the bad people in this earth, they're the women. Who are they? The wives of Hazrat Nuh and Hazrat Lut. They are the women, and they, what did they do? They disbelieved and went against their husbands.
Very true. Really made me realize one thing that, you know, as I think this was mentioned, that, you know, we tend to look up at specific women who are icons or models or something like that. And when we realize that later on, these women are not going to be remembered as much as women who are thousands, thousands of years ago. We remember Bibi Maryam, we remember Bibi Asiya, we remember them as such chaste and beautiful women. And this is very surprising, because you feel like, how much, you know, izzat and respect has Allah given these women that we remember them till today with all very beautiful and pious and good characteristics. Then we have to be such people who are, you know, trying to act like Bibi Maryam and Bibi Asiya and Bibi Fatima al-Zahra. And I think that is a very, very special point. So you've been talking about, you know, chastity and morality, and how, you know, in the women of Islam especially, we have been seeing that very much more than in any other religion today. And what is this chastity and morality, and why is it so rampant in only our religion? Like, I don't see it encouraged the way it is encouraged in our religion. Is this something very, you know, like, how can we show it as something so special that other religions are lacking to, you know, show off or show, while our religion is trying to, you know, maximize it to, you know, the utmost?
Yes, one of the secrets is in his speeches itself, that he says because of the family system.
Yeah.
You know, the family system should is so, like, solid that come out such women. You know, either they're very good, or if they don't abide by their free will and they use it wrongly, then bad women come out of it. So family system is very much emphasized. When we see the Western civilization, Ayatollah Khamenei says, it treats this very insignificant as an institution. You know, the institution of marriage, it treats it so insignificantly. And the great bond that should be between a man and woman is taken so ordinary, like just the changing of one's clothes, or, you know, going to a shop, from different shops to a different shop. And from this viewpoint, individual emotions and tastes and instinctive feelings are set against the continuity of family relationships. So whenever one partner feels difficult, you know, a situation come about and he feels different about something in his partner, or he faces some problem or shortcoming, that, you know, whatever he fences, he just does it, and he just comes out of this relationship as easily as got in.
Like, so, no responsibility.
Yeah, no responsibility. And look at it, and look at, compare it with our institution of marriage. So sacred, right?
Yeah.
Why? Because the solidification of the family bonds to come about. And therefore, you know, when that family comes about, a society can spring about, a society of good families together, and the system of wilaya can get stronger, the unity can get stronger. We are all striving for that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why Ayatollah Khamenei really stresses on the solidification of the roots of the family.
I've heard a lot of stories where they are together, they've got children, and the wife is like, oh, I'm still looking forward to when my husband's going to propose. They already have like 2-3 children.
Yeah.
So it's very surprising.
Yeah, and sad. Agonizing.
Very sad.
For the children. The children are not, like, they've not got a solid foundation in themselves. And Ayatollah Khamenei says that make it in such a way that, you know, that solidified family should bring up like a tree with strong roots, and the offshoots, that is the fruits, should be sweet fruits.
Very true.
Yeah, the children that are halal, that are so, like, you know, lawful children who will do something for the society.
I think they lack this understanding. They're this kind of selfish world that, you know, I want
They've turned away from the fitrat.
Yeah.
You see?
Thank you very much, inshallah. We hope to see you in the next episode, inshallah.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
A new survey has found that the number of American households reporting tumbling incomes is growing. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, the number of U.S. adults with declining incomes has soared in recent weeks in a sign of a weakening labor market. And that was according to a Bloomberg report. Bloomberg added, the share of households facing a drop in their incomes rose from 10.7% in August to 11.8% last month. Citing a survey of the U.S. labor market by data intelligence company Morning Consult, the increase was mainly driven by high and middle income families and the West region of the United States. About 20% of adults polled who earn $100,000 or more annually reported that they expected their incomes to drop in the next 4 weeks. RT added, the share of employees who reported working over 35 hours fell to 46.7%, representing a 12% drop from September 2022. The decline marked the lowest level since the spring of 2021, signaling a slowdown in U.S. business activity, the survey revealed. The most cited reason by respondents was soft business conditions. This comes as U.S. inflation-adjusted household income fell by the most in 12 years in 2022, highlighting the toll of a higher cost of living and the expiration of pandemic-era programs. The income and poverty data released by the U.S. Census last month showed how deeply the U.S. economic conditions were affected by the COVID-19 crisis and the government's response to it. The measure of child poverty more than doubled following the expiry of pandemic-era child tax credits last year amid the worst inflation in 40 years, which has undermined household spending power. In another report, RT wrote, as Uncle Sam continues to pump billions of dollars into Kiev's flagging fight against Russia and provide tempting handouts to illegal migrants, why is the average American worker forced to live paycheck to paycheck? Here's a question that most people have considered at least once in their lives and probably a lot recently. How much annual income would you need to feel financially secure? For the average American, the magic number comes out to be $233,000 a year, according to a survey by Bankrate. To bring the 99% back down to earth, the U.S. Census Bureau released some sobering data that dashed those elusive six-digit dreams. Inflation-adjusted median household income fell to $74,580 in 2022. A 2,300 decline from 2021 average of $76,330. This marks the third straight annual decrease since the COVID-19 pandemic began in 2020, taking a wrecking ball to the heart of the economy. The bad news doesn't end there for U.S. consumers, who are now struggling with the consequences of a foreign conflict in a distant land and a wide-open border. Those factors have prompted the cost of living to surge higher than it has in over four decades amid runaway inflation. In June 2022, the year-over-year inflation rate, as measured by the Consumer Price Index, hit a jaw-dropping 9.1%, the highest it has been since the administration of former President Ronald Reagan. A significant reason for the increase in inflation happened on March 3, 2022, when President Joe Biden signed an executive order to ban the import of Russian oil, liquefied natural gas, and coal to the U.S. This decision has had disastrous results for the local economy. Since Biden's inauguration, the cost of gasoline alone had jumped at one point by 100%. As of September 27th, the average price of regular gas was $3.832 per gallon, according to the AAA, while gas prices were an average of $2.3 per gallon when Biden entered office, forcing just about everything else to skyrocket, including the number of poor people in the U.S. The poverty rate in the U.S. exploded last year, the first increase in 13 years, and that was according to the Census Bureau. In 2022, the rate was 12.4%, up 4.6 percentage points from 2021, according to the Supplemental Poverty Measure, SPM, a method for tallying government welfare programs and tax credits designed to assist low-income families. Meanwhile, the expectations index, determined by consumers' short-term outlook for income, business, and labor market conditions, sunk to 73.7 in September. That follows a drop to 83.3 in August. The worrisome part is that an expectation index below 80 generally indicates an impending recession. an economic tragedy is already quietly happening for millions of American consumers who are now living paycheck to paycheck precariously and who have been forced to use the payment method of last resort to make ends meet, the almighty credit card with its exorbitant interest fees. On this score, the U.S. economy has broken yet another record, although not in a way that could be considered something to cheer about. The Street reported U.S. credit card debt rose by $45 billion to $1.3 trillion in the second quarter from the first quarter, a 4.6% quarterly increase. The Street added, it's the first time in U.S. history that household credit card balances topped $1 trillion mark as the number of credit card accounts expanded by 5.48 million to 578.35 million in the quarter. When consumer debt suddenly equals the amount the U.S. spends on its military-industrial complex, you know there is a problem. Clearly, the U.S. has some serious domestic issues that need to be resolved, but instead, it would rather fund a totally senseless proxy war against a nuclear power halfway around the world. Washington has given Ukraine close to $100 billion in aid, with more in the pipeline, since Moscow launched its operation in February 2022. The cash, however, has not only been used to fund Ukraine's military. Billions of dollars have subsidized participants of the Ukrainian economy, like farmers and small business owners, market players whose counterparts in the U.S. desperately need help too. A recent study conducted by the Council on Foreign Relations shows that more than $30 billion, around 40% of total U.S. aid to Ukraine as of July 31st, has been financial or humanitarian assistance that is not directly connected to military support. Military funding comes out to around $50 billion.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: Israel continues its genocidal war on Gaza for the 42nd day intensifying strikes on the territory's hospitals and people sheltering there. The UN warns that civilians in Gaza face starvation because food and water have become practically non-existent due to Israel's siege of the territory. And the American Civil Liberties Union sues Florida's university system for banning pro-Palestinian